Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we have in-depth coverage on traffic issues in the Garberville and Redway area and on the Leggett Mountain Folk Festival. But first, a quick rundown of local headlines. This is KMUD News. Starting off with an update from Garberville Sanitary District Manager Ralph Emerson. Here are some updates on the Garberville Sanitary District. On upcoming work, they are completing a water distribution and storage project, and that should be completed by July of this year. The district also secured a $4.25 million grant from the state to replace two water pump stations on Alder Point Road and Wallen Road. They removed a redwood water tank and replaced it with a bolted steel water tank, and they upgraded their controls and telemetry for more efficient operations. In terms of ongoing concerns for the Garberville Sanitary District, there are multiple small water leaks, which they are repairing as ongoing maintenance, but no large-scale problems. In terms of water quality, the water quality is currently reported as excellent. River levels are trending low, but that's not uncommon. There's also a link on the Garberville Sanitary District website to daily and historical river levels. Also, in terms of preparedness for Garberville residents, there's a preparedness emergency response plan on the Garberville Sanitary District website. Any questions might be answered there, but customers are also encouraged to call their office with questions. And call the Garberville Sanitary District at 707-923-9566 or head to their website, garbervillesd.org. Moving on to news from Caltrans District 1. Caltrans District 1 reached another major milestone in efforts to remedy a vulnerable stretch of US 101 south of Crescent City, which has been plagued by landslides, closures, and costly emergency repairs. Caltrans has completed the final environmental impact report and environmental impact statement and the final Section 4F evaluation for the Last Chance Grade permanent restoration project. Last Chance Grade is a lifeline for Del Norte County that connects residents, businesses, emergency services, visitors, and goods to the rest of California and beyond. This milestone brings the region closer to a long-term tunnel bypass that will move the highway away from unstable landslide zones and provide long-term safety and stability. There's still quite a bit of work ahead as final design, permitting, right-of-way, technical studies, and construction planning are still ongoing, but clearing this environmental hurdle keeps construction on track for 2031 to 2038. In Humboldt news for the upcoming fire season from CAL FIRE, according to scanner traffic today, June 2nd, two CAL FIRE aircraft arrived in Rohnerville for this summer's fire season. The aircraft include Tanker 91, a Grumman S-2T fixed-wing aircraft used for rapid attack operations. The second aircraft is a civilian King Air designated as Air Attack 657. Both aircraft are reported as performing proficiency flights ahead of the fire season. Also, according to scanner reports in southern Humboldt from today, June 2nd, an imminent breech birth, which often leads to a C-section, resulted in a medical call on James Creek Road west of Redway this afternoon. Initial response by a CAL FIRE helicopter and Reach Air ambulance was canceled due to the patient refusing medical assistance, as was a city ambulance staged nearby. This was around 1:45 p.m. However, by 1:56 p.m., the patient dealing with the breech birth was reportedly being driven to Redway to meet emergency personnel. They were eventually airlifted from the Eel River Camp north of Redway by CAL FIRE Helicopter 604 to Murray Field in Eureka for further medical assistance. In Eureka, EPD officers briefly shut down westbound traffic on 6th Street at I Street today, and also closed 8th Street between 5th and 6th Streets. This was due to a major multi-car collision that involved 4 infants, including 3 inside a Ford Expedition. 2 ambulances were sent to the scene, but no information on any injuries has been released as of this broadcast. Also in Eureka News, the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities delivered a petition to Caltrans, signed by 738 concerned Humboldt residents, today, June 2nd, concerning traffic safety around the 101 corridor in Eureka. Part of their petition reads, "There is a traffic safety crisis on Highway 101 in Eureka, including Broadway, 4th Street, and 5th Street. These streets are extremely dangerous for people walking, biking, and rolling. Thankfully, Caltrans has begun making safety improvements to Broadway, including building protected bike lanes, additional safe pedestrian crossings, and intersection improvements. However, the remainder of Broadway improvements are not yet funded, and there are currently no plans for major safety improvements to 4th and 5th Street. Because of the way these streets are designed, vulnerable people are regularly killed there. In the last decade alone, at least 5 people have been killed and at least 35 people severely injured while walking or biking on 4th and 5th Streets. Pedestrians are severely injured or killed on these streets at 90 times the average rate for streets and roads in Humboldt County. We'll keep track of any Caltrans reaction to the citizen petition." In Mendocino News, Leggett residents will be relieved that they no longer have to drive a half hour to Garberville to pick up the mail. Leggett has been without a post office for the past 2 years, after a lightning lit fire on March 1st of 2024 severely damaged the post office. The revitalized post office will open on June 15th and is still located at 67674 Drive-Through Tree Road. And next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. Our first main story concerns ongoing roadworks in the Redway and Garberville area. Residents have been frustrated by a lack of notification and long traffic delays, along with road closures. We spoke with Humboldt County's Public Works Division to learn more. KMUD News reports. Rachel Capistrano is an administrative analyst with Humboldt County Public Works. We spoke with Rachel regarding roadworks in the Redway and Garberville areas that are frustrating some residents with long delays, short notice closures, and unexpected traffic. First question really is just trying to get a little more info out to folks just on how these projects come to be, how they're planned, and what notifications are usually provided to the public here.
Yeah. Typically, we know at least 2 weeks in advance about our road projects and road closures, but our contractors notified us that they were in the area finishing up another project. And so instead of mobilizing back to where they're originally from, they decided to start this project. So we had to take the opportunity to move the project forward. And due to the compressed schedule, notifications were issued as quickly as possible, but we understand the frustration that residents are having and the impacts on businesses in Garberville and Redway.
And in terms of finding those notices, where are those usually released to? Where can folks, besides possibly hearing it on the newscast here, where would they find that information?
So I definitely encourage folks to follow us on facebook.com/HumcoRoads. And also the public can sign up for road conditions and project updates at humboldtgov.org/roads. Another thing I did want to mention about notifications is that for tow-away parking notices, we are typically posting 24 to 72 hours in advance for folks in the neighborhood. And I mean, unfortunately, we don't have a way to let businesses know unless we do know in advance about projects. So if we do know something that's 2 weeks out, sometimes our contractors will notify like door to door or business to business. But seeing as this was kind of like a compressed schedule and a short notification on their end is why we went forward on this project. And we also do message boards. And so we put message boards out throughout the communities and the roads that are going to be impacted, letting people know that there's going to be either up to a 15-minute delay or up to an hour.
If anybody has, you know, any sort of comments based on, you know, the traffic today and different things, where might they constructively direct that?
For questions, I suggest people definitely calling our dispatch line. That is going to be 707-445-7421. And whatever questions, road issues, potholes, that's the best line to call. We really wanted to get this project on track, and we understand some roads were closed a lot longer than others, but that was just so we wouldn't have any delays in the project and impact the community already as is. So, but with good news, I would say we are planning to finish up this project tomorrow afternoon.
We'll keep you updated. If road resurfacing projects in Redway and Garberville extend past tomorrow, Wednesday, June 2nd. Work slated for Wednesday includes Church Street in Garberville, Redwood Drive in the westbound lane, and Redway Drive. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Volunteer fire departments are an important resource and community gathering point for residents of Southern Humboldt and Northern Mendocino. In Northern Mendocino, the Leggett Fire Department raises funds for its volunteer program via a yearly music festival. We spoke with the coordinator for the Leggett Mountain Folk Festival to learn more. KMUD News reports. The Leggett Mountain Folk Festival is this Saturday, June 6th. Admission is free, and music will last from 12:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. There will also be over 30 arts and crafts booths and fun family-friendly activities, all in support of the Leggett Volunteer Fire Department. The event also takes place at their fire station. We asked Tony Trania-Berry, coordinator for the Leggett Mountain Folk Festival, to tell us more about this year's event. Starting off, could you tell us a little bit of background on the Leggett Mountain Folk Festival? Why should folks come out Saturday and attend the festival?
Oh, it's so much fun. So this is our actual 49th year, so we're looking forward to the 50th next year, but not consecutive, of our first Mountain Folk Festival. So we have, I think, about 25 or maybe more vendors this year. We have the most dynamite kids zone. With a splash pad, there's crafts and some beading that they're going to do. It's a lot of fun for the kids, and that's all free. All of our kids' activities are free. We have entertainment all day long with live music starting at about noon. We have a little tiny parade that starts at 10, and that kicks off our event. It starts in the middle of Leggett, and then you wander up the hill beyond the drive-through tree and arrive at the firehouse, and that's where our event is.
Can you tell us anything else as well about the live music and just the type of music that's traditionally performed at the festival and what folks can expect there?
You know, we have a pretty good variety. We try to have a little bit of variety for our guests. So we start with a little bit of rock. They're actually a good variety band. They rename themselves Days of Haman. And that's Cameron McDonald. They play a good variety of music. And then we have Scott Forbes, who is also local, Lions Maine, they were the Hill Honey and the Wildcats, and then some members change around, and they've renamed themselves the Lions Maine, and they do a country bluegrass. I'm really looking forward to that band, too. And then our headliner is Dirty Cello. They were recently in Eureka. They're an international band. They were in, I think it was Portugal when I spoke with them, and they do rock on cello. So it's going to be an interesting and, I think, very entertaining band. And then our after-party band is the IRA Rockers. And one of their members attended Leggett School. And they're really becoming popular, too.
Well, great. And then I noticed on the event listing, it talked about fire department demonstrations. What would that consist of?
Originally, when we first began the festival in 1977, logging was prevalent, of course, and so there we had competitive events. Now we have whatever they've got planned, a block carry, it's called, and I'm not sure what that is, but also the axe throw continues, and we're becoming a little more professional with that this year. Also, cornhole tournament. So the axe throw tournament, and we're having a bull riding tournament on the mechanical bull. It's the first time we've had that. Silver Jeep belt buckle for the winner of the bull riding tournament, which is at 9 p.m., and a 50-50 pot to be split with the fire department, and then you can practice throughout the day.
And then the last question I had, can you talk about how this benefits the Leggett Volunteer Fire Department? Why is it important for the community to support this event?
Wow, our fire department really is our everything. They're our first responders for our area, and they give, of course, medical assistance in the event of illness or accident. It's not just firefighting that they do, but they're good at that too. They have been working on with various grant programs to clear out brush from our community. It's been really a successful program, and that's ongoing. This is our only annual fundraiser for Leggett Fire, so it's an important one. Awful lot go back into infrastructure right now. We have one more additional kind of a permanent boost going in this year. We've made a lot of progress. It's a nice sight and becoming nicer.
The Leggett Mountain Folk Festival will take place on Saturday, June 6th from 12:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Leggett Fire Station. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Up next, we have a story from our friends at KPFA on protests against weaponized AI companies in San Francisco.
Activists gathered under the theme of No Tech for Fascism, War, Plunder, and Exploitation, Fight for Livelihood, Just Peace, and Liberation, with members of the International League of People's Struggles Alliance, along with other organizations. Protesters would march from the offices of Scale AI to Open AI, both companies that have been facing backlash for their labor practices, psychological trauma, and sudden firing of workers both in the U.S. and overseas. Mike Casey is president of the San Francisco Labor Council.
The advent of Uber and Lyft and how they, like special laws, spent hundreds of millions of dollars to get exempt from treating their employees as employees again. You know, we talk a lot about how bad MAGA and the oligarch right wing is, but you know what? We should expect more from the people who proclaim to defend working people's rights. AI is about to decimate this economy. Are they going to wake up when there are only 5 trillionaires and 30% unemployment rate? Are we going to have to wait for action then? No!
Earlier this week, it was announced that OpenAI had accepted a $500 million contract with the U.S. Department of Defense that will ultimately further the Department of Defense's tie to a modern military industry. This agreement led to a Philippine military massacre of civilians, including the recent death of 2 Filipino-American U.S. citizens. A spokesperson for Gabriela USA, an alliance of progressive grassroots Filipino women's organizations in the U.S., spoke on this issue.
Artificial intelligence is fueling the wars overseas! Has
increase of AI usage, not just in the U.S., but in other countries, such as the Philippines and Palestine, has caused uproar over working conditions, low wages, and use of AI in surveillance. Critics fear that if no change is made soon, it could lead to a bigger problem down the line. They're calling for better regulations for those not only in Northern California, but the Philippines and Palestine as well. Executive Director of the Arab Resource and Organization Center, Lara Kiswani, was one of the featured speakers at the rally.
We oppose tech for fascism, war, plunder, and exploitation, and we fight for the livelihood, just peace, and liberation for our people in Palestine!
Many organizations have called on the CEOs of Scale AI and OpenAI to address this issue, but so far they have declined and have repeatedly ignored any questions or comments on this issue. Activists and organization leaders worry for the future if nothing is done on this matter. Meanwhile, activist Nima Lin of the International League of People Struggles said, quote, "This will be the largest gathering of people directly impacted by tech warfare San Francisco has seen. And with more of our loved ones unjustly locked in detention here in the U.S. or killed in drone strikes abroad, we are certain it will spark a larger movement." End quote. Reporting for KPFA News, I'm Brianna Vasquez.
Last for today's newscast, your National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. A new state law requires language translation services for some government proceedings. The law does not take effect until July, but it already had a test during a hearing on a uranium drilling permit application. South Dakota Searchlight's Megan O'Brien explains.
The new law requires translation services for administrative contested cases, like a pending case involving a permit application for uranium exploration in the southern Black Hills. The State Board of Minerals and Environment is considering the drilling permit. Some project opponents requested Lakota interpretation services. Board members knew the new law won't take effect until July 1st, but decided to honor the intent of the law anyway. The first day of the hearing went without an interpreter. The board contracted with two interpreters for the following days. But some project opponents continued to object to the proceedings as conversations between lawyers and witnesses went without interpretation. On the third day, a project opponent filed a federal lawsuit against the board, the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources, and the company seeking the permit. It cites concerns about the hearing's lack of interpretation on the first day. A spokesperson for the department told South Dakota Searchlight that the hearing is adjourned until the lawsuit is resolved. For National Native News, I'm Megan O'Brien.
Alaska Native leaders are remembering a longtime advocate for Inuit rights, James Jimmy Stotts, who passed away in May. As the Alaska Desk's Aliona Niden reports, Stotts spent decades promoting food sovereignty and creating a unifying voice for Indigenous people across the Arctic.
James Jimmy Stotts died last month after a long fight with cancer. He was 78. For more than four decades, Stotts led the Inuit Circumpolar Council, an organization that represents Inuit people from Alaska, Canada, Greenland, and Russia. In his work, he fought for protecting Inuit sovereignty and culture, and for including Inuit people in the decisions concerning the Arctic. Patsy Ahmet was Stotts' friend and former colleague.
He cared so much for our people all across the circumpolar north, because we're related.
Stotts was born in Utqiagvik and lived in various villages across Alaska. Stotts worked for several tribal organizations, including the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. Rex Rock Sr., the current leader of the corporation, called Stotts a mentor.
He was someone that I respected and you always looked up to, right?
The leadership of the Inuit Circumpolar Council Alaska said that Stotts worked to bring people across the Arctic together. Former Alaska politician and Northwest Arctic leader Reggie Jewell knew Stotts for a long time. He says Stotts was among leaders who made it their goal to educate others about the Inupiaq way of life.
This is something that Jimmy understood really well. Rise to the challenge and responsibility.
Jewel and Amit say they hope Stotts' legacy lives on and the young people take on that mantle. In Anchorage, I am Alona Knighton.
The San Carlos Apache Council has hired a forensic accounting firm to conduct an audit following recent allegations of embezzlement by the tribe's own staffers. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio has more.
Four employees, including the tribe's secretary, have all been placed on paid administrative leave pending this review. The staffers have been accused of cashing fraudulent checks using the tribe's funeral assistance fund by creating hundreds of fake names for spouses or siblings who are not enrolled. The team responsible for overseeing the burial expense program paid out nearly $470,000 within the last 6 months alone. The tribe says it remains committed to ensuring that all funds are accurately accounted for. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrasio.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.